Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 25, Winging It. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the show that helps aspiring home cooks grow their skills and confidence in the kitchen so they can cook up memories with family and friends. And of course, if you've listened to the show before, you know my other mantra is that I'm not trying to tell you what you should or should not be cooking or eating. I just want to help you cook the food that you want to cook. I also want to remind you that if you subscribe to the show, you can get every episode as soon as they're released. And of course, you can do that at iTunes or Stitcher or Player FM or TuneIn Radio, or wherever you go to get your podcast fix. Now, before we dive into the first segment of today's show, I had a question for you. I'm working on a show all about eggs and egg recipes, and I want to get your thoughts and opinion on eggs. So I want to know what your favorite egg recipes are, if you have any super awesome tips or tricks when you're working with eggs. If you have anything you want to let me know about your love or maybe lack of love for eggs, please send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, and I'd love to use your comments in an upcoming show. Of course, you can also get a hold of me at Twitter at TKC Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. So again, if you have anything you'd like to share about eggs, your favorite dish, your favorite memory, your favorite tips and tricks, please get a hold of me and let me know. All right, without further ado, let's get on with the show. So today, my first topic I want to cover, and I've got a couple of things to go over today, but the first one I want to touch on was inspired by a recent film I watched and a recent podcast I guest hosted on a couple of weeks ago. My friends over at the True Bromance Film Podcast invited me on because they had the star and director of the documentary, The Great Chicken Wing Hunt, on their show. And they thought I would be a good addition to the panel since I've got the food background, the food podcast thing going on. So I happily agreed, and it was a lot of fun. Matt Reynolds, great, great guy, really fun to talk to. I think all told, we ended up talking for over 3 hours, the group of us. It was a lot of fun. We talked food, we talked hot wings, we talked Florida history, we talked New York history, we talked filmmaking and independent filmmaking and film festivals. It was just really a lot of fun. So if you want to check that out, you can head over to iTunes and look up the True Bromance Film Podcast. That was their episode 50. It came out a couple of weeks ago. But kind of in conjunction with that episode, one of the hosts of the show, Hiro, whose name I've mentioned before because he's asked a question before on the show, kind of had put a question to me about hot wings. And he sent me an email and said he's kind of on a quest to make perfect hot wings at home because it's kind of a hassle for him to go out. Maybe it's not a hassle, but it's less inconvenient for him to go out to find his hot wing fix, and he's trying to get them nailed down at home. Now, I know Hiro's a pretty good cook because we've talked quite a bit about stuff we cook. He's shown me what he puts together in the kitchen, so I know he's got some really good cooking chops. And he posed this problem that he's having with his chicken wings that I guess I can try to address in a few minutes. But his main problem with cooking wings is getting the skin nice and crispy. And after you put the hot sauce on the wings, that the wings don't get all flappy and soggy and they stay crispy. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But I thought it might be kind of fun just before that to maybe go over a little bit, well, about hot wings themselves. You know, I really do love hot wings, or as we'll be referring to them from here on out, buffalo wings. I love buffalo wings. I've, you know, eaten them as long as I can remember, but I hadn't really given them much thought. You know, I knew they were called buffalo wings because they originated in Buffalo, New York, but that's about all I knew. I really didn't know much more than that. I didn't really give much thought to how ubiquitous they are. They're everywhere in American cuisine, and it's obvious when you stop to think about it. Practically every restaurant, whether it's a fast food type of an establishment or a lunch place or a dinner place, probably everywhere but really upscale restaurants, and even upscale restaurants kind of have their own version and own take on hot wings. But you can go anywhere and find some sort of a version of buffalo wings. And what's really fascinating is according to popular legend, and I think there's reasonable amounts of documentation and backup to this story, but you know, apparently wings were invented in 1964 at a little bar in Buffalo called the Anchor Bar. And basically what it came down to was almost serendipity. It was almost an accident that this dish that has now become a culinary staple of American cuisine was invented. And in fact, I've got a clip from Matt Reynolds who kind of described it. This is from the podcast that I was on a couple of weeks ago. So I'm just going to let Matt explain it. And I think he gets it across really nice.
I think it's what's really interesting about the wing is, like, we tell the story in the beginning of the movie. Like, the wings were invented in the middle of the night by a woman who got a case of wings by accident back when nobody wanted wings and they were just used as scraps or soup stock for soup stock. And she, in the middle of the night, came up with this recipe that is so good that 50 years later, thousands of people have tried to come up with wing recipes since then. And a lot of them are pretty good, but like, I'll eat them once or twice and they'll be good. But then I always come back to wanting buffalo wings and preferring buffalo wings. I mean, she created this thing, this moment of inspiration in the middle of the night that is I think still better than any other, you know, sauce out there. I mean, really, as like a genre of sauce. I mean, within the buffalo wing genre, I think people have done lots of, you know, new and interesting things that probably beat the original recipe.
So that's a great way to put it. It was really kind of an accidental thing. A woman by the name of Teresa Bellissimo kind of invented this. She got this crate of chicken wings accidentally, which back then were basically scrap or soup stock material. But basically what it comes down to is she had this eclectic group of ingredients together, you know, butter, hot peppers, a certain type of hot sauce. She mixes them all up. She fries these wings. She dips the wings in this hot sauce and serves it to the patrons. And, you know, a phenomenon was born. And now everywhere you go, every restaurant has some sort of a version of hot wings or buffalo wings. In fact, there's entire chains of restaurants, right, that are cropping up and spreading across the country whose sole purpose is, you know, kind of born to deliver wings to people. I mean, the most common one I can think of that just started showing up in Oregon a couple of years ago, Buffalo Wild Wings, right? So all over the place, wings are kind of a thing, and they have been a thing for a long time. I can't really think of anything in American cuisine besides barbecue and hamburgers that has become as popular as hot wings or buffalo wings. And in that clip that I just played where Matt was talking, I had just asked him how he felt about other type of wing sauces and flavors, because his documentary, The Great Chicken Wing Hunt, is all about a group of what they call themselves wing hunters who travel around New York State looking for the perfect buffalo wing. I think it takes them something like 16 days. They stop at like 75 places. They eat 275 varieties of wings. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of wings consumed by this small group of wing hunters. There's only like six or seven of them in a couple of weeks. So that singular focus, the documentary is great. You should definitely go see it, and I'll include links in the show notes. But I just thought, it almost seemed like the time had come for something like that to focus on buffalo wings. I never really thought of it that way before, but it's a food that can inspire obsessions. So let's talk about the food part of a hot wing and what actually is a buffalo wing. Let's call it a buffalo wing. So when you look at wings, you're basically, there's three parts to a chicken wing, and as gross as it kind of sounds, or as weird as it kind of sounds, they're kind of analogous to your arm. Okay, so if you take your arm and you put your arm out in front of you, you have kind of the part from the shoulder to the elbow, like, you know, where your bicep is and all that stuff. And then you've got kind of the second part, which goes from the elbow down to your wrist. And then you've got your hand, right? So there's basically three main parts to a chicken wing as well. There's kind of the drum, which is that part from, you know, the shoulder to the elbow. And then there's what is commonly referred to as the flat, which is the portion from the elbow to the wrist. And then there's the tip, which is kind of just that little tip, wing tip that's on there. When buffalo wings are made traditionally, those are all trimmed up. So you have basically a little drumette that's trimmed off of the flat, which is trimmed of the wing tip. So you basically end up with two types of little wing pieces, like a miniature drumstick, and then kind of a miniature, more flat piece. And of course, if you've had hot wings, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, a couple other hallmarks of a true buffalo wing is that you trim up those wings. They're deep fried, but they're not breaded. They're deep fried naked, if you will. And then afterwards, they're tossed in some sort of a mixture of butter and cayenne pepper sauce, oftentimes with other peppers, other hot sauces, garlic added into the sauce. But it has to really be butter. And well, it's actually really, to be traditional, would be Frank's Red Hot sauce and a deep fried wing. And then, of course, kind of the second half to all that that's usually served with a buffalo wing would be celery and blue cheese on the side. So that's really what a buffalo wing is. And I've got one other clip I want to play. Again, we were talking with Matt, and he was kind of elaborating on the whole Frank's Louisiana Red Hot sauce is kind of a key component and a very critical component to an authentic buffalo wing. And partway through this, you'll hear the host, one of the hosts of the True Bromance podcast, Hiro, he asks the questions like, do you really think it should be Frank's? And let's listen to what Matt has to say.
And what about the like Frank's hot sauce? That company was like a kind of obscure, like mid-sized company, which maybe had $1 million a year in sales or something.
Do you really believe that it has to be Frank's?
You know, actually, yes. And I hate to like promote a brand, but Frank's grows its own peppers. And so none of the imitation brands have exactly the same flavor because Frank's has a proprietary pepper that they grow. Yeah. So like, I always wondered, like, why can't these imitation sauces, why don't they just taste the same? Like, ketchup tastes like ketchup. It doesn't have to be Heinz. But it's like Tabasco. It's like they grow their own peppers.
So there you go. According to the experts, it has to be Frank's Red Hot, which, by the way, is readily available in any grocery store around. So let's talk a little bit about actually making buffalo wings at home. Because, again, this is obviously a podcast about home cooking. So I want to cover that a little bit. And, you know, for me, buffalo wings, hot wings, they're almost a dish that's not worth making at home. And the reason I say that is they're not necessarily complicated, but it's kind of a messy thing. You've got to make the sauce. You've got to trim up wings. You've got to do some deep frying, which I love deep fried food. Don't get me wrong. I'm just not a gigantic fan of deep frying at home because it's such a mess. I don't have a dedicated deep fryer, like a Fry Daddy or anything like that at home. So typically when I do deep frying at home, I get out my enamel Dutch oven. I put some vegetable or some peanut oil in it, you know, put the thermometer in, heat it up and do deep frying right in that. And then when I'm done, I have oil that I need to either store, which is not terribly convenient, or dispose of. So I don't do a lot of deep frying at home. However, when I do, I'm usually very pleased with the results and it's a lot of fun and the food is delicious. It's just a little bit more of a hassle than I'm willing to take. Now, you can find recipes all over the internet for hot wings and buffalo wings that call for baking the wings, and they will all swear up and down that it's delicious and it's better, if not as good as deep frying. But I would leave that up to you and your preference. For a traditional, authentic buffalo wing, it does call for deep frying. So that's what I'm going to talk about here. Now, I found a recipe when I was doing a little bit of research to Hiro's question about getting a good crispy wing even after you coat it in the sauce. I didn't have a ready answer for him because I don't do that much deep frying and I don't really ever make wings at home. But one of the first places I found, appropriately enough, was the website for the Great Chicken Wing Hunt at chickenwinghunt.com. And Matt Reynolds, in the movie, actually makes tons and tons of buffalo wings at home for his friends for parties and things like that. So he actually includes his recipe on the website. So one evening I decided to get all the ingredients that he calls for, and I went home and I made buffalo wings. And I'll tell you what, I deep fried them and did the whole nine yards. They turned out absolutely delicious. I was actually shocked at how well they turned out. They tasted just like the typical buffalo wing I think of when I go out to get hot wings. So I'm not even going to mess around with coming up with my own recipe or altering recipes. I'm just going to refer you to the chickenwinghunt.com. So just go to chickenwinghunt.com and you'll find a section with his recipe. But just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, we're talking about Frank's Red Hot, and he stresses that you can't use generic sauces. You have to use Frank's Red Hot as a base. He puts in butter, a bell pepper, hot peppers, some honey or honey mustard, several cloves of fresh garlic, some celery salt, and whatever other hot sauces you kind of might want to toss in there to maybe kick the heat up a bit if you'd like to. So maybe Tabasco or Cholula or Tapatio or those sorts of things. And, you know, the best I can do to answer Jairo's question at the moment as far as getting crispy wings is I fried the wings at a pretty high temperature. So, you know, when you're doing frying at home, it's really helpful to have a thermometer that you can put into the oil if you don't have a deep fryer that gives you the temperature on it so you can kind of monitor it. And typically, you know, for deep frying things, you're going to want to get it to about 375 Fahrenheit. And in when I was frying my wings, it would go between 375 and 400 as, you know, I added wings and took them out and it heated up. So 375 to 400 worked well for me. I fried the wings for about 10 minutes and I tossed them in the hot pepper sauce and they turned out really, really good. So a couple of keys when it comes to deep frying anything, especially meat, is you don't want to use anything frozen. Anything you use should be unfrozen or completely thawed all the way through for even cooking. In fact, before you fry anything, I recommend you take it out and you let it sit at room temperature for maybe up to an hour. So it kind of, the temperature evens out. And so when it fries, it's going to cook a lot more evenly. The second thing that helps with crispiness is, I've mentioned this before, is whenever you get something nice and crispy and it's hot, the worst thing you can do is set it aside in a pile. So don't take your wings out and pile them up because what happens is the wings on the bottom of the pile start to steam because it's hot and there's moisture there. So they start to steam and then they lose all the crispness that they had from frying. So when you're holding the wings before you sauce them, make sure you spread them out. You can put them in an oven at like 175 to keep them warm until you're ready to sauce them if you're doing large batches. But those are kind of the two keys to really shoot for crispy chicken. And of course, it's challenging. It might take you several tries to get exactly your process down where you're not overcooking the chicken, but you're making it crispy and cooked all the way through on the outside. So head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/25 for the show notes. I'll have a link to Matt's website, thechickenwinghunt.com, and of course to his recipe and links on where you can find the movie. I highly recommend it. Even if you're not a huge buffalo wing fan, I think you'll have a lot of fun with this film. It's a funny movie. It's got a lot of spirit and humanness to it. I'll just put it that way. It's not a mockumentary. It's a real thing. They actually went through and traveled around New York looking for the best buffalo wing around. And the characters are great. The story's great. It's just a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. And of course, if you're going to watch it, you should definitely head over, get the recipe, and cook up your own batch of buffalo wings. Today, I'd like to introduce a new short segment to the podcast I'm calling Into the Pantry. And this is where I take just a moment to talk about a specific ingredient and try to give you some insight or maybe answer a specific question about that ingredient. And today, I want to talk about something that I've heard come up a couple of times recently. And the question is, can you substitute lime juice for lemon juice while you're cooking and vice versa? Now, the short, easy answer is yes, you absolutely can substitute those back and forth, especially when you're cooking with just small quantities of either lemon or lime juice or the zest of either citrus. Small quantities while you're cooking, substituting those back and forth, generally not a problem. And of course, if your recipe calls for large quantities of either one of those citruses, and that's the primary flavor profile of the dish, say lemon meringue pie or key lime pie, certainly you don't want to substitute each other because then your final dish would taste nothing like you originally intended. Now, there's one other slight caveat when it comes to substituting lemon and lime juice, and that typically comes when we're talking about canning or preserving at home. Now, lime juice has a slightly higher acid content than lemon juice, so if you're doing canning or preserving and the recipe calls for lime juice, it's probably not a great idea to substitute in lemon juice because the lower acid content may throw the recipe off and cause a food safety concern. Now, it's okay to go the other way around if it calls for lemon juice and you want to use lime juice. That's okay because the higher acid content in the lime juice won't be compromising any food safety. So when it comes to canning or preserving, be sure to follow the recipe very closely depending on what it calls for. But in general, day-to-day culinary use in your kitchen, a little bit of lime juice or a little bit of lemon juice, generally interchangeable. All right, I had one more question I wanted to tackle this week, and I wanted to take a little bit of time to do this. This one came in from Dave Meyer. He is a listener of the show, and you may have heard me talk about him before, but he hosts a couple of other podcasts or co-hosts a couple of other podcasts, The Cool Story Show and Podcast Without Borders. Dave and I have been having a conversation over social media for quite a long time about cooking, and Dave, I think, is interested in getting in the kitchen more and doing some more cooking. But his question he posed to me a while back was, what are five recipes, what are five dishes that are awesome and that a single guy can pull off? So that's a tough question, Dave, and it's a tricky request mainly because a lot of it really depends on the type of food you like to eat and what you like to cook. Now, I know, Dave, in your case, you don't have a ton of experience in the kitchen and you're probably just still figuring out what you like to cook. But in general, this is a question that just varies a lot by each person. So for this segment, I'm going to offer you some general guidelines, some ideas, rather than a list of things you must do or must learn. So rather than pick out five dishes that were easy to make, I chose five dishes that are not only really delicious, but will make you a better cook just by learning them. And by mastering or getting to know each of these recipes, you'll be setting yourself up to kind of expand your repertoire. You'll be able to learn other recipes with the techniques you use with these initial five. Now, just before I get to my list, I did go to social media, of course, to ask the question of other folks on what they thought their essential must-know recipe is. And I got a few back. And by the way, if you're listening to this and you have a great answer to that question, an essential recipe that's delicious, that's easy, that would be great for a single person to know how to make, hey, why don't you send me an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com and I'll make sure Dave gets a hold of it. So here are some suggestions that came in over Twitter when I posed the question on essential must-know recipes. Tristan and Ryan both suggested a variation of spaghetti and either meatballs or bolognese sauce. Doug had a really great one. He said miso soup was a comfort food for him and a must-know recipe. Kat from the Blaze 90210 podcast said eggs, and when I pressed her on what kind of preparation of eggs, she basically said all kinds. Hiro from the True Bromance Film podcast, who we talked about in an earlier segment, said grilled cheese is his must-know recipe, and he referenced the movie Chef, so check that out. I posed the question about roasted chicken and how people felt about that, and Bree said lemon, garlic, rosemary. That's all she was going to say about that. And Sally from ShoestringSally.com said that it's a cooking cornerstone for her, and there's a lot of ways to mix it up, and it's budget-friendly as well. So Dave, already, just from the suggestions that came in on Twitter, I think you have a lot of ideas. So I am going to go over my list of five recipes or five dishes that I think you should give a shot. And if they work for you, you'll be able to expand on those and start really cooking a lot of different types of recipes. Now, for some of these, I have recipes available on my website. For others, I found links to good recipes, and I put all of those in the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/25. So you can head over there and take a look. All right. So here's my list of five dishes that I think single person should know how to make or should consider learning in no particular order. But my first one was roasted chicken. I think this is a relatively easy dish. It's inexpensive. It's not difficult to pull off. And the great thing about a roasted chicken is, A, it's a meal in and of itself, but then you've also got chicken that you can use for other things. So after you roast that chicken, you can make chicken soup. You can take the meat off of the chicken to make tacos or sandwiches or all sorts of things. So a roasted chicken is a great presentation, especially if you're entertaining anybody. So I recommend you learn how to do that. Now, my second suggestion was also something that came in on Twitter, and that is learn how to make either a bolognese, which is basically just a tomato and meat sauce, or some other sort of a pasta sauce. And I prefer tomato-based pasta sauces because they're, again, quite easy to pull off. Some of them do take a little time, but it's, for the most part, unattended cooking. So it's something simmering on the stovetop that you can do while you're home doing other things. But the great thing, again, about a pasta sauce is you can do a lot of different things with it. You can just cook up some pasta, toss the sauce on there, and you've got a meal. You can use a pasta sauce as a part of a filling for a lasagna. You can, with a little bit of herb and spices, you can turn it into a pizza sauce if you needed to. So there's a lot of things you can do with a tomato-based sauce. So that's something I definitely recommend learning how to make. So number three, I'm going to say some sort of a fish dish. And specifically, I'm going to say a pan-seared salmon. And this is a big piece of personal preference. I love salmon. It's my favorite fish. And pan-searing it is really pretty easy to do. And it makes for a wonderful presentation. It's healthy. And let me just say, if there's a special someone you're trying to impress over dinner, a nice piece of seared salmon will probably do the trick. And after you master salmon, you can move on to other types of fish and other preparations with a lot of confidence. You know, fish and seafood oftentimes causes a lot of stress for home cooks because getting it right can sometimes be difficult. And seafood in many cases isn't something that a lot of home cooks work with past your typical fish. But I think once you kind of get comfortable with making one variety, you'll be able to expand your horizons quickly. Okay, number four is very simple, and I would just say stir-fried vegetables. So you don't necessarily need a wok to do this, although a wok is great and makes it a little bit easier to kind of stir-fry and get the vegetables moving around. But you can make a good approximation of a stir-fried vegetable dish in a good heavy skillet. But, you know, stir-frying vegetables, very easy to pull off. And again, can be repurposed in a lot of different ways. If you just need a vegetable side dish with dinner, you can stir fry some vegetables with a little oil and salt and you're done. Or of course, you can add in some sort of a protein, some sort of an Asian sauce, and then you've got yourself a nice Asian dish if you make a side of rice to go with it. So stir frying vegetables, I think, very easy, very essential, and again, can be repurposed in many ways. So once you learn that technique, you're going to be on the way to making all sorts of sauteed and stir-fried dishes. All right, number five, and the final dish, this is a little bit non-specific, but I'm really leaving this up to your personal preference, but you really should figure out and learn a good soup recipe, or I would even say maybe a chili recipe. But find out what kind of soup you like to eat, find a good recipe for it, and really try to put it together for yourself at home, because first of all, there's really nothing better than homemade, scratch-made soup. And second of all, you can make big batches of it, save it for lunches and dinners later on. Most soup freezes well. And again, once you kind of figure out how to make a good soup, you can start experimenting and adding in variations of your own and tackling other, maybe more complicated recipes. So those are my five ideas. And of course, your mileage may vary and everybody's probably got different ideas on what five essential recipes should be that they should learn to make, or that new cooks should learn to make, or that are easy for single people to pull off. But just to recap the list really quick, roasted chicken, some sort of a pasta or bolognese sauce, a nice pan-seared salmon, stir-fry vegetables, and a good soup or a hearty chili. Once you get those five mastered or even remotely comfortable with them, you'll be off and running with all sorts of new opportunities and new recipes on the horizon. So Dave, I hope that helped you out and gave you some ideas on some dishes that are kind of easy, but impressive and delicious, and that can kind of be repurposed and can go a long way for a single person. If you have any questions on any of those, of course, you can find me on Twitter or shoot me an email at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Well, folks, that does it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. You know, I want to say thank you once again for tuning in and joining me today. It was a lot of fun, and I hope you got at least a couple of things out of the episode that you can get right into your kitchen and put to work. Now, as I mentioned before, if you'd like to get a hold of me, you can do that on Twitter at TKC Podcast or Facebook at facebook.com/KitchenCounterPodcast or shoot me an email at feedback@KitchenCounterPodcast.com. I'd be especially interested to know if you have any show ideas or questions I can cover on the show. And don't forget, I am looking for feedback on egg recipes that you enjoy. Now, one more thing. If you like the show and you'd like to help out the show, I'm not looking to sell you anything and I'm not looking for your money, but I would love it if you'd tell a friend about the show. Tell them to check it out. And maybe if they're not familiar with podcasts, show them how to get a hold of it. And if you're feeling really ambitious, I'd love it if you headed over to iTunes and left me a rating and review. All right, until next time, this is Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.